Is your team not performing well? Is morale low and turnover high? Are you falling further behind the competition? I'm here to help. I'm your host, Shaney, and this is the Leadership Show, where business strategy and culture finally meet, and we make the long-awaited shift from rhetoric to results. I promise I'm not your typical boring leadership consultant, and I will help you get your shift together. Let's do this. Hello, leadershifters. Shaney Bogoski here, and today is a treat for me, and I know it's going to be a treat for you. The guest on the Leadership Show today is Jeremy Goldberg. Say hello.
Hey, how are you?
Jeremy is a friend and a client and somebody I admire greatly, and you're going to hear about him. But let me just say to start with, Jeremy is one of those people who has managed to take something he's really passionate about and combine it with what he does for a living, which is a rare thing that I think a lot of us shoot for. And I know I'm there now, and quite frankly, working with people like Jeremy and being surrounded by people like Jeremy is one of the things that completely lights me up as a consultant and a coach. The other thing I think Jeremy has managed to do so well, and by the way, Jeremy is the president of a startup called League Apps, and I'll let Jeremy explain what their mission is because it's also amazing, is the idea of conscious capitalism and doing well while doing good. And I think all of those things are on the minds constantly of leadershifters, and it's one of the reasons I was so keen to have Jeremy on the podcast. He was one of the first people I reached out to when I started the podcast. So without further ado, leadershifters, meet Jeremy Goldberg. Jeremy, thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. And Shaney, congrats on the podcast. I'm excited that there's a broader platform for people to hear all your good advice.
Yeah, oh, thank you. So, Jeremy, aside from being the president of League Apps, and you are also a board member on a variety of nonprofits, which I know is important to you, and the father of two young children, so I also wanted to mention that in the introduction. So, just tell leadershifters very quickly how you got to where you are as president of League Apps, and tell us a little bit about what League Apps does and the mission.
Sure. Well, the first is I'll share a little bit about League Apps and then work backwards to how I ended up in a place where I think my skills and my passion have intersected. League Apps is a technology company that really is focused on powering how sports is organized around the world. And our goal really is to make sports seamless. Whether you're a parent, whether you're an athlete, whether you're a coach or an administrator, how can we give you the tools and the technology to really make sports happen? And I think we do this because we think and believe that sports is such a valuable role in people's development, our leadership skills, and our communities, that if ultimately we can provide that infrastructure layer for youth in local sports, great things can happen. And so that's what we've done, and we're approaching a 75-person company based here in New York with the DC office. And the great thing about it is as we have success, we get to impact more and more communities. And given the shifts that are happening in youth sports, it's an exciting time to be in the industry. I actually got to League Apps by virtue of being a partner at a venture development studio called 212 Media, which is a New York-based kind of firm that really had the idea of how do we identify opportunities to start businesses, put our own capital and raise some capital into developing those businesses, and get them to a certain stage before we really bring in outside investors and scale the businesses from there. So I've been involved with that. League Apps actually came out of another company called SportsBite that was started before my time. But I joined as a partner and was so excited and enamored with the vision and mission of the business that I decided I had to jump in and spend my energy here. The other businesses, two of which we've now sold, one of which is Sovin that we sold to a company called Reliance, and they formed the largest kind of music venture in India called Reliance Joe. And then the second is a company called LiftMetrics, which sold to Hootsuite, and that's focused on data analytics. And then there's a company called Speakaboo. And then previous to that is a journey really filled with more passion, whether it's in the nonprofit sector like Arab Israeli Peacemaking, and in conflicts in South Asia, or it's the Obama campaign and my passion for politics. I've always believed that if you're passionate about what you do, you'll get the most out of your skills. And that's what I focus on.
Yeah, fantastic. I love it. And so let's keep with that in terms of the mission of League Apps. Tell leadershifters what it is and how like even the broader vision for the impact that youths participating in sports today has on society?
Yeah, so I think anyone who's played sports, I think, can understand the lesson that you learn from it, right? Whether it's how to overcome adversity, or how to work as part of a team, or how to challenge yourself and push yourself to other levels. And not only does that lead to individual transformations, I think that at one point, there was the most highly correlated statistic with being a CEO of a Fortune 500 company came from whether you'd actually played sports at the high school level or beyond. But also, just the value and the good that comes from sports within communities, right? The fitness that happens, the wellness that happens, the engagement of families and other people that as mentors, it becomes a very powerful platform by which to bring people together. When you walk in our doors and our offices, there's this great quote from Nelson Mandela talking about how sports has the power to change the world. And if no one else than an authority that Nelson Mandela believes it, I think it tells you of how important of a platform it is.
Yep.
But interestingly enough, sports is so important, but our mission really go beyond just this idea that sports matters. It's the recognition that youth sports itself is changing. And that as youth sports have to evolve, similar to how esports come out of video games, the real question is, what does that future look like?
Right.
Is it a future characterized by accessibility, that every kid has the right kind of sports experience? Is it a future that's characterized by professionalism, where people are trained and the right kinds of organizations are doing the right thing? Is it a future characterized by innovation, so that there's the right kind of introduction of technology and the right kind of management of data? And ultimately, is it a future that embraces the power of sports as an institution to bring people together, which is something we really need in this country, and it's certainly something
the whole
that's
world.
Yeah. So I think that the RI notion is that future of youth sports is really in question. And the real question is how does that evolution happen? We really want to be the infrastructure for that and make sure we shape that evolution for good.
Okay, awesome. So sports as a microcosm for life, essentially.
Yep.
And the life skills that being part of a sports team teaches an individual and a team in terms of socializing for their future success.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. So take us through just a couple of the mechanics of how you guys do that. So how do you take that vision that sounds amazing and turn it into a technology platform, which is.
Yeah. The core, I think one of the things I've realized, I've been in the nonprofit sector, probably raised in my lifetime $50 million for nonprofits and politics. And so I understand what that takes, the major gift fundraising and foundation funding and gala dinners and everything else. What I think is so exciting about what we're doing at League Apps is it's ultimately scalable because we've designed a business model that as we have success, we can impact more and more communities. And that starts with a belief that the people that are organizing sports, right, the people that are these sports organizers, I really think of them as entrepreneurs themselves.
Sure.
They're running a local lacrosse program. They're running a basketball program. They're running a soccer program. Or a baseball program, and they're on the ground making sports happen, and they're the ones that are really imparting those leadership lessons, and they're hiring the coaches and setting the culture and the standards. So we can provide the technology and the community for those people that are on the front lines of impacting the sports experiences. That's one of the ways that we can have an impact, right? By enabling those that are on the front lanes of making a difference. And so we, as an organization, as a business, have really celebrated the role of this organizer, the sports entrepreneur, and the role that they're making. And the more that we can impact them, free up their time, give them capacity, give them knowledge, give them data, you put them in a position to really profoundly impact communities. So that's one thing. And the nice thing is it means more customers that we get on board, the more we can have an impact, right? It scales very nicely as we scale a business and allows us to put all of our energy into really helping those organizations. The second tactic that we've used is to say, well, who else are partners that we could work with that have vested interests in the stakes of these communities, what's happening in the sports ecosystem. So that's why we work with people like Major League Baseball or with the National Basketball Association, the NBA, or almost 40 professional teams who share our passion and belief about what youth sports should look like, mm-hmm. and how to influence that from both a fan development and a player development perspective. And so how can we help advance what they're doing in the community with our technology and do so to the benefit of a lot of the people that we work with? And the third is, as a company, what else can we do to demonstrate our commitment to trying to make an impact to this message, in addition to working with the right kind of partners and really impacting the right kind of customers? And that comes through something we call Fun Play, which is really an initiative of ours that leverages our technology, our expertise, our time, and our resources to impact the communities that we serve. So, for example, we give software grants to nonprofits that wouldn't otherwise be able to afford us and provide support for them to leverage the technology so that they're not left behind. we do a charity basketball tournament called Ballin' for Charity. And we do that every March, where we'll have every startup in the city can join and participate. We raised $30,000 the past 2 years. And then we turn around and give that money away through microgrants that match and support a lot of the opportunities that we see coming out of our community and from our employees. And then we'll also identify mentoring or opportunities where our people on our team will actively get involved in making sports happen with various kinds of nonprofits in the New York area and the DC area. So that combination of what we do directly with our customers to impact them as we scale, what we do with partners, and ultimately what we do as employees allows us to feel like we're advancing our mission every single day.
I love it. And I just want to pause for a second and ask leadershifters to think about something you feel passionate about. And maybe it's not what your company does, as is the case with Jeremy. But I think what Jeremy just laid out in those three parts is that's how you take a vision and a passion for what seems like an amorphous problem, and you turn it into something that is tangible. And you bring in partners who share the vision and give them a platform on which to collaborate to solve these bigger global / national / community problems. And so I guess I want people to take away from this, like, this shit can be done. Like, it doesn't have to just be something we talk about, like, oh, we wish that there was more of this in the world and more discussions happening around that. Like, think about ways that you can either create something entirely greenfield, like Jeremy and his partners have with League Apps, or a way for your existing business to partner up with a company like League Apps on a mission that you feel equally as passionate about. So, okay.
That's right. Well said. And I think the one thing I'll say is I've done that in a nonprofit context, and my wife is a social entrepreneur, and I see the impact that she makes. But also what I think is really exciting is I focus every day on making our organization better, our company better. I know I can do so, and that only enables us to have a bigger and bigger impact in the communities that we serve.
Absolutely. And I want to ask about, in more detail, what shifts you're seeing happen in league sports, either because of technology or just because of other innovations or changes in cultural dynamics in this country.
Yeah, so I think that there's what's fascinating about the platform of the youth sports and local sports more broadly is that there's so many different layers to the disruption that's happening. Mm-hmm. So I think in every sector that we look at, technology will play a role in that disruption, and I think that's very true within the world of youth sports because in many cases, I think esports is a good analogy here. It was video game that is combined with the best of sports, teams, leagues, tournaments, competitions. And in many respects, how esports and video games have borrowed from sports to create an entirely different vision for an industry is really what youth sports is going to have to do with respect to esports, right? It's going to have to evolve, whether it's the introduction of augmented reality or virtual reality, or how we're using data to make smarter decisions or help coaches, or sophisticated ways that we're automating so much of the manual work that goes into sports. There's very much a platform for innovation. So that same technology that's impacting every other sector will impact youth sports and change how that is experienced, right? But what makes youth sports as an industry really different is that you also have a layer of disruption of who's actually organizing the sport. That it used to be the purview of very local community organizations, but that's shifting, right? There's so much money invested, so many resources that are being focused.
So I just want to clarify. So it used to be like the soccer dad who had enough bandwidth to organize the local right. league is who used to do it. Okay. Yes.
Right.
Okay.
And that's what's happening now is there's a professionalization of youth sports that's happening where people are now doing this as a profession, not as volunteers. Okay. And not to say that there aren't very important, worthwhile community organizations, but by far and away, the fastest growing sector within this are the club and travel team, professional organizations, private okay. organizations, in some cases the for-profit, in some cases nonprofit. But there's this mentality of growth and scale, these enterprising organizations, that's really changing. And you even have now larger entities, larger corporations, private equity funds, professional leagues and teams getting a lot more involved. So you have the people that are organizing sports that's shifting, as well as actually the technology shifts that are going to happen. And then layered on top of that is actually the people that are making decisions within youth sports. Parents are shifting their preferences and how they're valuing experiences and their expectations that are influencing what's happening in youth sports. And lastly, kids. Right. And as we see, kids are becoming agents in and of themselves. They're driving the product life cycle for how things are being produced. they're driving something like esports, where it's not like parents are organizing this, they're doing it on their own. So the voice of kids are going to become bigger and bigger. So when you look at the confluence of these trends, what you see is a massive shift that's likely to happen in youth sports. And when you talk to people in youth sports today, they'll say how different this was from growing up, right? How different youth sports is from when I was dominating the JCC leagues in Dallas. And while that's true, the actual changes that we'll look over the next 5 or 10 years will be significantly greater than actually the changes that we've already had that already feel, you know, very different. So that's the shift that we're looking out for and ultimately trying to influence.
And how are you seeing the platform bring in participation in youth sports that wasn't available to them previously for whatever reason?
It's a great question. And ultimately, it's an open question, which is my point about what the future of youth sports looks like. The challenge of a lot of these shifts is that there are kids that are left behind, that the organizations that were servicing them have less resources, less participation, less coaching. And so ultimately, you do see numbers right now that show declining participation within lower income communities or at the age of 12 or 13 when kids are burned out by the system. What I believe is there's opportunities for correction there, right? And one of the ways is how do you provide the tools in the hands of those that are running those community organizations that actually provide such valuable services for those communities? How are you providing technology or thinking about a platform that allows for new kinds of innovation, so new kinds of programs emerge to fill the gap where right now kids are dropping out because there aren't alternatives? And so I think over time, you'll see the promise of the idea of those kinds of gaps in the market being addressed, but those gaps exist now. Yeah. We've been really fortunate to work with someone like Major League Baseball that has a program called Reviving Baseball in Inner Cities, where they made the direct investment in underserved communities to help organize baseball and softball organizations. And combined with our technology, it's really lifting the capacity of those organizations that all of a sudden take organizations that don't have volunteers or enough coaches or enough staff, and now they have the tools to actually operate and grow and scale for the first time. And so programs like that are things that we're really excited about, even as those club and travel organizations are ones that we're also really excited about working with, because they're the ones that are really driving innovation and ultimately, I think, are a big part of the solution for what youth sports can look like in the future.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Okay. So I want to shift a little bit from kind of youth sports and the shifts happening in the business to the shifts that you have seen as you guys have grown League Apps, started as a super lean startup where all of you guys and gals were wearing a lot of different hats. And I know just as an interested party that you've done a couple rounds of fundraising. And so you've graduated from lean startup to pretty nicely funded startup. And a lot of leader shifters are entrepreneurs, whether in an actual startup or even entrepreneurs within their own company. So just kind of curious to hear some of the highlights, some of your key learnings as you shifted from A to B.
Yeah, I think when I think about it, there's four phases that I can think about as a business that I think we've gone through that have really tested our leadership, and the same shifts have tested our culture, the way that culture has manifested itself. The first phase is really, can you figure out product market fit, right?
Yeah.
And so ultimately, you have an idea and you feel like there's a need, but yes, can you actually build a product that people find value in, ultimately will pay for, there's an economic model behind it that actually needs to address that need. And so you have a small amount of people in the company, you're very, very hands-on. It's basically myself and my partner, Brian, and a couple of engineers and maybe a couple of interns. And you have a vision in which you're really largely relying on friends and family. In our case, it was very much to media to really figure out what is this and can I actually figure out this mix? And the vast majority of businesses don't ever figure this out. But ultimately, it's a hands-on phase in which you're not worried about culture and everything else. You're so connected to it that it's influenced by what it is that you're doing, your own actions.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to the point where you start to find product market fit. You start to discover that. You start to build initial footprint of a team. Let's say that gets up to like 20 or 25 people. And so you're still sitting in the trenches with everybody there, right? You have a daily pulse on the vibe of that culture. In our case, we defined our values very explicitly at this phase, and we helped create buy-in. But you're not as worried about process. You're not as worried about communication because you're sitting around and you just roll your chair over and you're talking to everybody you need. You can see everybody in your company in one room. And the direct line of connections allows through your own actions and osmosis a transmission of those expectations and those culture values, even as you start to formalize it. And I think we did, even as a 7-person company, to put our values on the wall and talk about them. Then you go from like a, let's say, a 25 to 50 plus person company and things start to shift because all of a sudden there are people that are starting that I haven't even talked to, right?
Yeah.
That you're not seeing people every day. You're not working with a lot of people. You're working a lot more through managers or directors. And so you're at this next phase where the ways in which you communicate and transmit messages have to shift. And you have to be more conscious of like, wait a second, am I working through managers here? What's the direct way by which I'm communicating to my employees and my team members? And what's the role that I have? And so you start to manage that larger platform, and it's a difficult transition as yes. you start to figure that out for the first time. And now we're embarking upon a new shift, right? And I suspect it's not the last one, which is, okay, we're now at the threshold of a business where we're really scaling, and we've got to bring in a leadership team. And we've got to surround ourselves with people that have more experience and expertise in any given area than we have. Yep. And the mindset shift that this requires that I'm starting to work through is realizing, okay, I can take over a department. And what I used to do before is take it over, run it, do it better than anyone else in the company, get it to a certain place over the next 12 to 18 months, and that would be success. But now to get to the level we want to get to, if I spend my time running a department and I've not had a lot of experience in that area, that even if I spend a year on it, the progress that I can make as good as I can get will still only be in the 70th percentile, even if I'm the best at it possibly, as opposed to recognizing that if I quickly understand what I need and I hire for that, I'm going to get someone in that top 95th percentile, right? The top 5% of people who can run marketing or product or engineering or sales or any of the departments we need. And so 100%. That recognition of like what got you here won't get you there.
Yes. And that recognition, it sounds like the mindset shift is we no longer are hiring people and telling them what to do. We're hiring people and letting them tell us what to do.
Yeah. And then your culture is now transmitted through those leaders that you bring in. And so it's a lot more about the recruiting process and the ways in which you're working with that leadership team to convey and express leadership and express your culture than it is what you're doing as hands-on as before. So this evolution, I think, has led to these four phases. And as I said, I imagine there'll be more phases beyond that, hopefully, when we're thinking about, IPOs or even grander.
Yes, but at this stage,
that's the progress that we've gone through.
Yeah, I love that. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. So I just want to review because I took some notes. So do you have product market fit, right? So does your great idea actually have a market that has a revenue model associated with it? Starting to build the team to execute on it. And I want to come back to something you said there in just a minute about that's when we define values. Yes, not every entrepreneur or startup is doing that. And that is foundational. It's a mistake if you're not doing that. And LeagueApps has amazing values. Again, we're going to come back to that in a second. And then growth, like recognition that we have to communicate differently through this phase, and which parlays into the scaling. And what I love so much about what you said there is not only are we shifting the way we do things, we're shifting the way we think about things. And it's a place a lot of people fall down. And I spend a lot of time coaching and consulting people on those mindset shifts. Like, what are the new paradigms as you have grown your business? And again, whether it's from lean startup to more well-funded startup, or just a division of a company that, was like this and now it's going here. It's all the same because the world is changing so rapidly that we're all growing in some way.
Yep.
So the LeagueApps values. Are you comfortable? I don't want to put you on the spot. So if you're not, just tell me, are you comfortable explaining sports dog?
Yeah, no, I'm happy to. And I think, so when we went through this process to define our values, I think as you mentioned, we did this at an early stage in the business. And the process that we went through is, I think we've always believed that if your values are aspirational, that's where you can get into trouble, right? They need to really be authentic and reflective of the reality of the business. And so as a 7-person company, we went around and we asked all the people at the company, which wasn't many at the time, but we said, how would you describe what it's like to work at LeagueApps? How would you describe your most effective colleague? How do you think our customers would talk about us? If someone asked you at a dinner party, what is LeagueApps all about? What would you say? And then we asked our investors and our customers and our advisors the similar question. And we began to collect what we thought was a pattern of responses where the same concepts were coming up over and over again. And then we gave voice and definition to those things. And as you mentioned, we ultimately come up with a device that made it easy to remember. So when I looked at it, it was like a divine kind of bolt of lightning that said, oh, wow, I see the word sports and dog in this. Now,
there it's was a no big O's. Anagram.
So there was no O's at the time. So it was really sports dog. But it became easier to think about it as sports dog. And then to this day, you can go up to anybody in the company and say, hey, what's sports dog? And they will rattle through the values. They will tell you what those mean. You'll see banners when you walk into our office that are hanging from the rafters, almost like you're in a gym and a championship. The championships where you have people that have won the award for that value in the past year at our award ceremony at our biannual offsite. And so what sports dog really stands for is sportsmanship, passion, openness. We did come to define the O. Results, team, student of the game, difference maker, and grit. And we felt that those values were the ones that emerged early on in the business. Now, clearly, my partner and I had a handprint on that because we were the ones that had set that tone early on in the company. But those really emerged from the kind of business we were building and the kinds of people that we were attracting and what we felt were important. And even to this day, those, I think, are values that are core to what we do. You do realize you need to continue to figure out definitions of that as you scale, the way you apply those value shifts, but the core essence, those are the ingredients that distinguish us and why we'll be successful is at the heart of what we do.
Yeah. And how are you continuing to use that to shape the culture as you grow the business? Because I happen to know that culture is an integral part of what you everybody cares about at the company, and it's what has made League Apps, in addition to being innovative in its own right, has made it a unique place to work.
And so the first is, I think it's recruiting is really important. And I think we've gotten to the point where we've become a lot more explicit so that when we're interviewing any candidates, we will literally evaluate them against those values. And so if there's four people in an interview loop, each of us are looking for specific values, a specific set of behavioral questions that help us understand how have they demonstrated and revealed those the ways that they manifest that value or they don't. And so that becomes an easy screen where are they a culture fit or not? It's not a gut feel anymore. It's much more an explicit sense of how do they match up against those values that we're looking for. So a lot of it comes to who you're letting the into the company as the first lever. Then once they're here, I think a lot of it comes down to repetition and reminder. What are the ways that you can consistently put culture in front of people and help people understand it's important? And so that can take a few forms, right? One is recognition. How are you highlighting people that are doing a really good job living up to the values? So whether it's our annual award ceremony where the company votes and we identify the one person in the company that's really embodying that value over the course of the past year and recognizing and honoring that. But we also have our weekly all-hand meetings as a team where we'll do sports dog awards, where people will give shout outs at the end of the meeting to people that have lived up to specific values and identify someone in the value they connect to. And then each office, there'll be somebody won the week before that picks someone else to win the sports dog award.
Oh, nice.
So every week there's a recognition of who's doing things that manifest that value. And then layering onto that is a performance management process, which we call conditioning, that happens every 100 days.
Yeah.
So when you're getting feedback with your manager and you're having that conversation, it's not just purely about performance. It is connected really to all of those values and ultimately how those values are manifesting itself. And so when I'm saying, hey, if someone's not being successful, I might say, hey, one of the things we have is there's an openness challenge, right? How do we ultimately, you're not being open in the way that you're taking feedback. That's what the challenge is. And we'll have that conversation grounded in a discussion of our values. And so I think it's the combination of who you let in and ultimately how you manifest that stuff and establish that allows you to be successful.
Absolutely. I love what you just walked us through. And again, I want to pause and just highlight some of the things that I think are really important for people to pay attention in that, which is when you're building your values, don't set them in a vacuum, don't dictate the values. I really appreciate that you collaborated in your values and you checked with your employees and your vendors and your investors and you created right. something that wasn't aspirational, that is realistic and things that you could demonstrate it with real tangible behaviors as opposed to just like some bullshit, right?
Yeah, this is not the Ten Commandments. I say I'm not Moses. So it's not like you're coming in and presenting the tablet.
Right.
It's exactly. Got to be a process that seems authentic and creates buy-in and allows everyone to be accountable to them.
Exactly. I love that. Ten Commandments. Right. It's like, you know, these are things people want to be, not do, right?
Right.
Yeah. Right. It's excellent. Okay. And then in terms of how you weave the culture in, folks, it starts after you've got a company culture of buy-in around the values and living into those, and through the recruiting onboarding process, through the employee development, rewards and recognition, performance management. And it's so cute how you guys call the review sessions conditioning sessions, you know, in in within that sports theme. So lots of great, great juicy takeaways from what you have shared with us today, Jeremy. Any other last tidbits, words of wisdom that you'd like to share with our leadershifters, both around the business or any other work that you do, shifting mindsets and doing great work out there?
Yeah, I the two immediate thoughts that come to mind. One is a lot of this is about the shifts within yourself, especially if you're in a mindset where you're part of a growing organization, you're trying to lead a team. Ultimately, you have to model that yourself. One of our values mm-hmm. is to the game, and I do think that that's so critical. As I mentioned, at least we're in a growth mindset, growth industry, right? And yep. I guess that requires literally a growth mindset. And because you talked about those different phases, it tests you in different kinds of ways. And so what your skill set is or how you apply that skill set, you've got to constantly be learning and paying attention to that and be willing to make shifts yourself, shifts in your roles and your responsibilities, shifts in your habits, shifts in your assumptions. I think those are all really important things to being successful. And the second thing is that I think the lessons that I've learned in building league apps and the companies that I've been part of, I think are equally applicable to what happens in the nonprofit world and the change that you're trying to create. And as you're trying to do that, I think you're fundamentally wrestling with the question of how is it that I can set a vision for something, create some kind of change or shift in the world, and then ultimately, what's the right way to enlist people to go do that? And that therefore requires a definition of the culture required around it to help make that kind of transition and shift. And so, as I feel, and the nonprofits I've enjoyed working most with are those that are trying to change things and really trying to grow, and therefore they're having to transform themselves as part of that journey. And that makes it really fun to be part of those conversations and apply the things I've done in my for-profit work with the nonprofit work.
So, yep, absolutely. It reminds me of a podcast I did a couple months ago with Dr. Dave Carley. So he's in a totally different business, and he's a doctor, and his platform is completely different. Yet the theme of what we talked about was learn how to learn. and I think so that transcends no matter whatever business or walk of life you're in. That is a precursor to success in this day and age, is learning how to learn and continuing to grow and accumulate the knowledge and skills and people assets that you need to move forward.
There's a great one of the things that's nice about being a sports business is you can authentically use every possible sports analogy and bring it in. So all the inspirational quotes that come from sports, those are things that we use in our business. If you take someone like John Wooden, the famous basketball coach for UCLA, set the winningest record of all time. What he said was, it's what you know, it's what you learn after you know it all that counts.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real big part. As leaders, we often think that we know it all. We have to act like we know it all. But really, it's what you learn from there that allows you to be successful. And that's why I think you've been such an amazing resource to me and others that you work with companies and individuals, is because that learning is really necessary. And sometimes it's hard to be able to see that yourself. And so you need the benefit of an outside coach or outside perspective or outside podcast resources that help you recognize, oh, wow, there's something I can learn from this, there's something I can borrow that allows for and enables the shifts that are required for the kind of success we want.
Thank you. And if people want to reach you either to follow up or in support of League Apps, how can they reach you?
Yeah, so best ways to reach me, you can hit me up on Twitter at Jeremy Goldberg. You can hit me up on Instagram at Jared Goldberg, although not all that I'm doing much besides sending out my stuff to my wife. And then you can go to leagueapps.com and learn more about the company and also ways to contact me and other individuals in it. So I'm always happy to hear from folks and provide feedback. I'm also active on LinkedIn. So those are all places to get me and happy to share whatever help and wisdom I can.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being with us today and sharing all of your great point of views and all the great work you're up to in the world. Leadershifters, I hope you enjoyed, and I really want to reiterate what I said early on in the show, which is, what are the big visions that you have? Like, figure out a way to operationalize them, like Jeremy and the folks at League Apps has, because that's how we shift things in the world. And you know how to reach me? hello@theleadershiftproject.com. And all of the social media. Thank you again for listening and watching today. And we will be back next week with another episode of The Leadership Project. Until then, mwah. Love everyone. Bye-bye.